It's Friday afternoon at 3:06. We're coming to you live from the Midtown Atlanta studios on a very rainy afternoon in Atlanta. It's Political Rewind time. I'm joined in the studio today by Jim Galloway of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. His column appears in the newspaper on Thursdays and Sundays. And, of course, he's oversees the Political Insider blog that you can read online. State Senator Steve Henson, the Democratic leader of the Senate caucus, is here with us as well. Todd Rehm, our friend, the Republican political consultant and editor of GeorgiaPundit.com, we expect to be joining us shortly. He sent us a message saying he's apparently stuck in traffic, Jim.
Hurry up, Todd.
I don't know, Senator. You can go wild with all your Democratic stuff.
Man, these guys need to fix the roads.
I'll tell you what. While we're waiting for Todd, and if it takes him a while to get here, we'll go ahead without him for the time being. But let me share with you a couple. You know, we talk about how you can communicate with us by tweeting to us at PoliticsGPB. Some of you do that pretty regularly, but people are also communicating with us by email. My email address at George Public Broadcasting, bnigut@gpb.org. And we're getting quite a few messages that way. So I wanted you to hear very quickly. Don McAdam wrote a note the other day. He was responding. Buddy Darden, Steve, you'll like this. Buddy Darden said that if Secretary of State Clinton had some problems, if she were indicted or whatever, that he thought somebody else was going to jump into the race, probably a Joe Biden or someone else. And the message we get from Don McAdam is, why are you all ignoring Bernie Sanders? He suggests that Darden is representing the establishment Democratic Party and just not paying much attention to Bernie Sanders.
Well, Bernie Sanders has been an independent his whole life. He's run against Democrats in the past in his Senate elections. And, you know, although he's certainly running as a Democrat this time and part of the process, I think a lot of insiders feel he's not the candidate we need for success in the
Well, party. We're going to talk a little bit more later in the show about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. But we appreciate that from Don McAdam. Also, got an email from Ian Cowie. He said that he pointed us to a Bill Moyer story that Moyers wrote a column for his website in which he described the Donald Trump Walter Winchell effect, suggesting essentially that the media, Jim Galloway, is simply not calling Trump when he dissembles, when he changes his story. And we're going to post the Walter Winchell, Bill Moyers a blog about this. But Cowie wants us to know that he thinks we're not watching Donald Trump closely enough.
Oh, I think what is it? 8 billion in free media. We're talking about what his flips and his flops, and people just aren't paying any attention to him. They don't care.
Do you think that's right? Are we doing our job?
Well, I think it could be done better, because in real hard news, sometimes his flops and out-and-out lies aren't being told that well. But when they are, you know, you're right. That people seem like they're not paying much attention and don't seem to care. And it's frustrating. I hope, hopefully, when it gets down to brass tacks and the fall, people will be paying a little more attention.
General election is a whole different thing than the primary contest, so we'll see how that unfolds. All right, let's do this. Let's hope Todd is able to be here with us shortly. But Jim, let's start. How do you characterize next Tuesday? It isn't one of the biggest primaries we've had in a long time, but there are significant races on the ballot.
Right, right. I mean, your top races aren't going to be in the U.S. Senate category. They're going to be on the Republican side. You have some interesting challenges to Republican incumbents, two relative freshmen, Barry Loudermilk and Doug Collins. Both races are getting a lot of attention. You've got several state Senate races that are very, very important, I think, especially on the Republican side. You've got a couple of chances for Democrats to move into a good position in both the House and the Senate, state Senate, to maybe take a couple seats back if there's an anti-Trump backlash in November.
So let's point out that you've got a race in which incumbent Doug Collins, excuse me, has, I think, four opponents. He's being accused, Steve Henson, and as is Barry Loudermilk, the other incumbent with several challengers, of not passing, I think, the conservative purity test. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you're not willing to shut down government on any day of the week for any reason, if you vote for any spending bill at all, you don't pass the purity test. And quite frankly, I don't know anybody that could pass some of the tests being thrown out of here, but they're both being attacked.
In the 11th, Barry Loudermilk is accused of not just the omnibus bill in December that kind of put some funding on the table and gave Georgia what it wanted in the water wars. It was Loudermilk's vote to retain House Speaker John Boehner.
Yeah.
And that has brought him three opponents, maybe one or two of those are real solid ones. You've got Daniel Cohen, William Lupp, and Billy Davis running against him. We've got an interesting fight coming up between Loudermilk and Daniel Cohen. Loudermilk has put out these just volatile flyers all throughout the district, accusing Daniel Cohen of having a partner who did business with Iran back during all the troubles.
It's going to be interesting to see in both that and the Doug Collins race. We don't have polling.
It's very difficult to poll in a congressional
district. Of course it is. So, the question is going to be, how important is this outsider mood really gripping the voters of Georgia in the way that it is so much of the rest of the country?
Right. And right now, I don't know what Steve has seen out there. My sense is that it isn't. That we've got everything we've heard has all the early voting stats, and early voting, I think, ends today. It doesn't show a whole lot of enthusiasm for this primary. And I'm thinking you're going to have some pretty low turnout.
Yeah, I'm thinking things are a little flat. And of course, as in all cases, the incumbents have the advantage of money and getting their word out there. So I think they'll be all right. Plus, both Collins and Loudermilk have conservative records. And I think most of their voters are going to, consider them not extreme liberals. And
all right. Our friend Todd Rehm just walked in. We're so glad you're here, Todd. Thank you. We've already given Steve Henson a chance to run amok in talking about Democratic politics while you weren't here to check him.
We're listening to the left. Hurry up. Balance us out.
I was going to call Loudermilk a liberal just to get things going.
Todd, as long as you have just walked in, we're talking about the Doug Collins and Barry Loudermilk challengers, and you are as close an observer of politics on that level as anybody. Do we really think that Loudermilk and Collins have significant challenges, that one of them could be or both of them could be unseated in the primary?
I would be more concerned about Loudermilk because one of his opponents has some real money behind him. In terms of looking at how I had a front row seat for watching Barry Loudermilk beat my candidate in that race in 2014. And Barry and his whole family and friends and neighbors went out and they scoured neighborhoods. And that kind of connection between a candidate and an electorate isn't as easily swayed by direct mail and television ads. I think he's got as good a base within his electorate as you can, having been in office for only 2 years. So I would expect Loudermilk to win.
Where's the money coming from his opponent?
That'd be Daniel Cowan.
Daniel Cowan. And my understanding is most of it was he reached into his back pocket.
Who is he, Todd, Daniel Cowan? Do you know much about him? I don't, to be honest with
wealthy
you.
Wealthy businessman, if I'm correct.
Yeah, his father's been involved in politics.
And some of that business part of it has come back to bite him. There's been some criticism over a deal that was sort of a party and a half away from him.
Yeah, Jim mentioned the Iran that he was involved in doing business
I think,
with Iran.
I think it's important to note that in both the Doug Collins race and the Barry Loudermilk race, there is kind of a fallback position. I think there are enough candidates in each contest that you're not going to see an incumbent defeated outright. You might see one forced into a runoff, and then things will get very serious.
Yeah. And brutal and hard, even harder hitting. But Doug Collins, I think it's easy for folks who spend their evenings tuned into C-SPAN and their favorite talking heads to get upset about one vote or this vote or that vote that Doug Collins has done. I think in terms of constituent service, he has been a just a fantastic member, just just in terms of the number of mobile offices he has where he goes out and handles folks' problems with the Veterans Administration or Social Security or whatever. And it's going to be very hard to unseat him. I think it's also difficult, quite frankly, to make the case that somebody who's been in office for two terms is more establishment than the guy who served, what, 10 years previously.
Right. And and the other thing you have to remember is that Doug Collins in particular, he is the governor's congressman. He is the House Speaker's congressman. And that does matter.
All right. Tell you what, let's move on to the third congressional district where we got a wide open seat. Of course, Lynn Westmoreland is retiring from the House after some 20 years, I think. 12, 14 years?
12 years, I think.
Many people speculate he's retiring so he can start preparing a bid for governor down the line. There are seven people in that Columbus race who are vying to be his replacement. One of them is Mike Crane. This is obviously one of the most conservative districts in the state. Fair statement,
yeah,
Steve?
Yeah, it's a very conservative district, and you know, conservative people running for the seat there on the Republican side.
Well, so they're all rushing to the right in that race, which makes perfect political sense.
I would say it slightly differently. I would say they're all rushing to the outside.
Oh,
not necessarily to the right.
Very good.
There are several of the candidates who are trying to tap the anti-establishment outsider strain of politics, and I would say Coweta County, that whole district that stretches down to Columbus, it's conservative. It's conservative in a different way than some of the other districts are. It's got a strong, more of a tea flavor than some of the other, and more of
a tea flavor than church flavor.
And I would have called it where Ted Cruz would have done, I would have expected him to do best.
Okay.
More of that.
All right. So maybe that's one of the reasons. That's a really good point, and I thank you for correcting me on that, Todd. Mike Crane cannot call himself an outsider. He's been a member of the legislature.
He maintained himself an outsider in the legislature.
If you ask the governor, he was
yes, Lieutenant Governor.
Right. I get it. But certainly Mike Crane is positioning himself as the most conservative candidate in the race, as this new radio spot attests.
And now, a message from Christian conservative and Republican for Congress, Mike Crane.
Hello, this is Mike Crane. President Obama's threat to cut school funding if we don't allow boys to use girls' bathrooms is outrageous. What kind of government do we have when our leaders ignore us and trample our freedoms? And so-called Republicans aren't fighting for religious liberty. They're funding Planned Parenthood and giving in to the left's demands. Whatever happened to standing on principle? I'm Mike Crane. I'm running for Congress to defend religious liberty and all our freedoms.
All right.
Wow. He's not only running to defend religious liberty, he is running against Barry Loudermilk, and he's running against Nathan Deal in that ad.
And I would argue that one of the things that's interesting to me about that is it's the most reactive ad to current events that we've seen. That's something that's really bubbled up in the last few days, and I haven't seen many of the other candidates, perhaps any of the other candidates, really latch on to that.
Yeah, I was going to say, as a matter of fact, that's the only spot that I've certainly seen that goes after this transgender issue. And that's interesting about that, Steve, is we're told that in this new world of media, where people can turn a spot around in a matter of going into a studio or not even having to go into a studio in an hour, it doesn't seem to be happening around transgender, transgender controversy.
Well, in the hardcore base, there's probably a understanding of it. But for a lot of Georgians, they don't really understand the issue or know exactly what's going on. They're a little confused by it. I think, you know, probably as it develops more, you might hear more about it. But, you know, it's a simplistic thing. It doesn't get into a lot of substance, and I'm sure it'll connect to a lot of people.
Well, I don't know. In the third district, Jim, it seems to me all you got to say is Obama's for it.
Yeah. But on the transgender issue, I think what you've seen is you've seen both the governor and Attorney General Sam Olens. They have really come out against what they call Obama's overreach. But on the issue itself, and on the personalities involved, they've been very, very cautious. And I think they may be fearful of ultimately a kickback on this.
One of the things I thought when I was listening to it is I would be hard-pressed to think of a conservative buzzword that was not included in there. And it did hit a couple strains of that conservatism. It hit the Christian conservatives, the cultural conservatives, which is where there's a lot of overlap. But it also talking about it in terms of overreach kind of taps into that small L libertarian, capital C constitutional brand of conservatism that's out there as well.
So do we imagine with seven candidates in the race, it's unlikely that someone will come up with 50% plus one? We're headed for a runoff in that race almost certainly.
I think so. And I don't know what Todd thinks, but I think your top candidates are I think Mike Crane is likely to come out on top on Tuesday. And then you've got Jim Pace, who's a business ally of Dan Cathy of Chick-fil-A fame. And then you've got Drew Ferguson, who's the mayor of West Point.
And what I've been saying, I said this exactly today, is there's two tickets, and two of those three guys have those tickets to the runoff. I don't know which of them, but I think Jim got it right.
You know, I personally will be interested in seeing what the turnout in the third district is, where you've got an open seat. But there's no reason to expect that voters get excited about going to the polls in a congressional primary, or is there?
No. What you have to look at is the underlying ballot issues, like in DeKalb and in DeKalb County. You have just this boiling cauldron of a CEO race for the county commission. You have a very, very hot DA race. So that's the. But I don't know. Todd, is there anything in the third district that would correspond with that?
Yeah, is there a third district issue?
I would say that one thing that you do have going is in Columbus, it seems like some of the local races, the city council and the Board of Education, the Ledger Enquirer did a good look at this and showed that seems to be driving some. That's the only ones I'm really aware of.
Well, I just wonder in the congressional race whether we can expect that the outsider fever, in at least Mike Crane's case, this rush to the right, if all that energizes voters in a year like this. And I just don't get that that's going to be a big
pull. And it's tougher, too,
when
it's many candidates, seven candidates, people get a little confused. It might be a bigger turnout in a runoff.
I'm going to go out on a limb and tell you that what I've seen consistently in polling is higher undecideds than I'm used to seeing a week out. And when you have lower level races like the county commission CEO in DeKalb and some of these Board of Education in Columbus driving votes, I think we're going to have a smaller election. And I think that at the end of the day, it's going to be friendlier to incumbents than we have been led to think led to believe.
All right. So let's move on. Steve Henson, you have a Democratic U.S. Senate primary, among other races. That's going to be at the top of the ballot. And the Democratic Party has made it clear that Jim Barksdale is the man, the businessman who is funding, well, for the most part so far, self-funding, right?
Yeah, he's pretty much gone into his own pockets to put money up for the campaign, and he brings a fresh face, somebody who hasn't run for office before and has that business experience, but also has the concerns a lot of people have of trying to restore the middle class and get down income inequality and it's been on TV. He's done his mailings, and I don't think any of the other opponents are going to be able to put much money up.
And so far, virtually, go ahead.
What I think sums up the money situation in that race more than anything is a picture I took in my neighborhood of one of the other candidates who took a sign from a previous race, taped over for what he was running for then, and wrote in Sharpie for Senate. And this is not just an isolated case. I've heard of I had heard of these before I actually saw one, and that's the level of competition that Barksdale has.
All right. Well, nobody really knows Jim Barksdale except apparently former mayor of Atlanta Shirley Franklin.
I'm Shirley Franklin, and I want to tell you why I'm supporting Jim Barksdale for the United States Senate. You know, the guy with the old-fashioned hat. Jim started out cutting grass and delivering newspapers and worked his way up to become an investment manager. Jim Barksdale believes in taking responsibility for his employees. When things got bad, he even took out loans and put himself in debt so he wouldn't have to lay off anybody. Jim will take the same approach in the Senate. Invest in people to create more good jobs, education, job training, and higher wages.
Shirley Franklin, Jim.
It's all about the hat, isn't it?
Boy, what do you call that hat again, Mr. Galloway?
It is a touring cap.
Or a snap. I think you said it was a snap brim cap.
Also known as a snap brim. A floppy version is a newsboy cap. But it isn't a hat. But that said, I think, you know, it's you laugh at that. Hats are supposed to be verboten in political races.
Unless you're in Texas, head coverings.
I mean, we have Michael Dukakis to blame for that. I think in large part with that tank commander helmet that he wore, made him look so silly. But that said, the reason this hat is so important is because it's probably the one reachable idea that they can be tossed at a Democratic voter at the last minute and register. And the fear is, if you are a Democrat on Tuesday, you are thinking about Mississippi. 9 months ago, Mississippi, we had 3 Democratic candidates for governor. Right? Mm-hmm. 2 with money, 2 with names, 1 with no money, 1 with name, no names. The third guy won. It was the truck driver, Robert Gray. Nobody knew him. Not his own mother didn't even know that he was running for this. So he won the nomination outright and then left for Pennsylvania with a load of sweet potatoes. and that, if you're a Democrat, that's what you're afraid of.
Well, you know, you're always afraid of somebody who's never run for office before, doesn't have any name recognition out there on the ballot, and even if you spend $1 million in the state, it's hard to buy the kind of name recognition you need. It's not like a Jason Carter or been in office or Michelle Nunn, who's the free media has covered.
Yeah, and then those worked out well.
Well, they were great candidates, and it was a bad year across the country in 2014. And I think this is going to be a better year. I think Johnny Eisen's got a lot to explain and to do about his record. You know, he's about 74. He's got his Parkinson's. We'll see, how he shapes up and how vibrant a campaign he can run.
I think Johnny Isaacson's going to be fine. I think he's going to walk through the Republican primary, and I think he'll. The question is, can he hit his age at the polls? not can he win? Can he hit his age?
Are you talking about in the general?
In the general election?
Wow.
I think he could set the new high water mark for a general election because he is pretty popular among some groups of Democrats as well.
Okay, so here's my question, Steve. Once the primary is over, and assuming that Jim Barksdale will emerge as the Democratic candidate in the general election, is the state Democratic Party going to put money behind him? How much?
Yeah, that has not been decided, I don't think. Certainly the state Democratic Party is going to be working for the ticket, and Jim will be, if he were to win the primary, be at the top. So the state party will be helping him, and national interests will be helping him.
I think it's all going to depend on what the dynamic between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump is in, I'd say, mid-September.
Yeah, and how they're playing in Georgia.
And if North Carolina's numbers are better, the Hillary Clinton cash will go there. If Georgia can make a case for itself, then possibly we get that money.
All right, before we take a break, Jim Galloway, I'd love to take a look at one other issue that you brought to our attention in Political Insider. Dax Lopez, state judge. He's Jewish. He's Hispanic. He was, of course, appointed to a federal judgeship, which David Perdue quashed.
He's also a Republican.
And he's a Republican. Thank you. Your Political Insider blog reported on a rather disturbing campaign against him by his opponent. You want to tell us about that?
Roderick Bridges. It was a flyer, and in it, Mr. Bridges makes great note that he is Christian, and Dax Lopez is not. Now, we have a provision in the U.S. Constitution that says there shall be no political or religious test for office. But some judicial candidates don't know that. I think what you're going to see is it can't happen before the Tuesday vote. I think after the Tuesday vote, you're going to see the Judicial Qualifications Commission get involved in this.
Interesting. I mean, the other thing that the ad that he is running, or the flyer, I guess, is what it is, it talks about that his supporters include
Jesus
Christ, Lord and Savior.
Yes, tops the list of his supporters is Jesus Christ.
I would say this. I'm not quite as offended by this. I think that there's a long history of candidates referring to their own Christianity in terms of as a way of building common ground with the voters.
Oh, that's fine. We just saw that with Mike Crane, too.
I would not have, that said, I would not have done this, but I can't imagine that. I've got to think the JQC is thinking really hard about whether they want to make this their last stand before they're on the ballot in November.
Especially if he loses the race. And, right. I don't know that they'll have standing. Maybe the state ethics.
And I don't believe that. I would argue that there is no prohibition on voters using somebody's religion as their litmus test or as a factor that they consider.
There is certainly no question, Steve Henson, that there are a lot of candidates who like to tout their Christianity. It becomes a little bit more, and I'm speaking as the Jewish member of this group today, it's a little more sensitivity when you're running against a Jewish candidate.
Yeah. But also, look, as we saw with Mr. Crane, as I mentioned, I mean, it's candidates do point out their religion. I think it's you cross the line when you point out the other fellow's religion.
Yeah, you had a little hands up and a thumbs down.
All right, let's do this. Let's take our first break of the show, and when we come back, we'll clean up on some of the races around town and then move on. There's some pretty interesting stuff happening, obviously, on the presidential side as well. It's 3:32 on Friday afternoon. You're listening to Political Rewind.
Donald Trump's past support for some gun control measures raised questions among conservatives. But in pursuit of the GOP nomination, Trump's message on the Second Amendment has been clear.
The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed upon, period. Period.
Now Trump is talking to the National Rifle Association. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 until 7 on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm here with State Senator Steve Henson. He's the leader of the Democratic Caucus in the State Senate. Todd Rehm, GeorgiaPundit.com editor and Republican political consultant. And, of course, Jim Galloway, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You know, before we get to presidential, let's talk, Jim. Wow. What a day in the United States House of Representatives yesterday. Let me set it up very briefly. The House was taking up a bill to which Democrats added an amendment that would have been a protection for gays and lesbians who are denied employment on the basis of their sexual orientation by federal contractors. The measure essentially said if you discriminate against gays and lesbians, you're not going to be able to get federal contracts, right?
Right, right.
And
with Doug Collins, our Doug Collins, presiding over the House.
Was presiding, as of course members take turns presiding. It came to a vote, and it looked as if Democratic members had enough votes to pass this amendment. The rules were then... They weren't suspended formally.
Bent
a little bit. The vote was kept open.
Open for about 5 or 6 or 7 extra minutes.
And the speaker, just to set this up further, had said, we're going to leave the vote open for members who want to come to the well and cast their ballots. They were looking for enough votes to defeat this amendment, the Republicans. Okay? All right.
And I think what was the final, it started out at maybe 221, the vote did?
It started out with enough.
All right, so they had enough votes, it looked like, to pass it. The vote stayed open. Nobody came to the well. Let's listen to what Steny Hoyer, Democrat, said after this all just kind of came undone.
On this vote, the ayes are 212, the nays are 213. The amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Ryan, our speaker, has told us if people were in the well, that the vote would be held open. I was standing in the well. No one came or no one had the courage to come into the well to change their vote. But notwithstanding that, the vote kept changing. Mr. Speaker, from a parliamentary perspective, how is that possible?
Mr. Speaker, let me raise another parliamentary inquiry. Mr. Speaker, let me raise a parliamentary inquiry. Mr. Speaker,
the chair will put
Mr.
them in
Speaker,
gross. The question is on the adoption amendments.
Vote on the committee rising.
All right. So this is, of course, in itself interesting, but it's interesting in a larger way, isn't it, Jim Galloway? Because it kind of brings the religious liberty fight to the floor of the U.S. House.
It does. And I don't know if you want to go in this direction, but it also comes a day after the House voted to ban the flying of the Confederate battle flag at veteran cemeteries.
Yeah, at certain VA cemeteries. That's exactly right.
So it was one where kind of you had a little bit of moderation, and then another where it was beaten back.
Todd, let me get you to jump in on this. Look, these kind of games go on in Congress. They go on the Democratic side and the Republican side. But this appeared to be the Republicans once again put themselves in a position where they are vulnerable to these attacks, that they are anti-gay and lesbian, that they don't support civil rights for all people. It just seemed like such a no-brainer in some ways to many people on the other side of the aisle.
Well, two things. I've never heard of such shenanigans in Georgia happening in our capital. But if you were to go through district by district, state by state, through the United States Congress, I think you would have trouble coming up with more than a handful of Republicans or Democrats who are more threatened by the other party in an election than by their own party. That's a result of gerrymandering / redistricting. It's a result of residential patterns, blah, blah, blah. But most Republicans really, and if you look around this state, how many Republicans are worried about, Republicans in Congress are worried about November? Not really, maybe one. Three or four of them are fending off challenges in the primary. So I don't think that being called an extremist by your opposition is an impediment to any Republican congressman or member.
I'm going to just take a little different, a much different take on this. I think you have to look at the fact that both votes were allowed to occur. You know, maybe one failed, but both votes were allowed to occur. And I think what you're seeing there is a very, very big style difference between Paul Ryan and John Boehner.
Yeah. Steve Henson, look, you're going to deal with religious liberty again in the legislature next session. Obviously, it's going to come back roaring back for at least third session in a row.
Yep.
But to see it move, what we're now hearing is that this was not the opening salvo, but the first really big effort to deal with religious liberty. The arguments against this bill this amendment in the House were mostly this is harming the religious liberties that people in contractors may want in terms of dealing with gays and lesbians.
Well, you know, the dynamic started changing from D.C. when the Supreme Court made their decision, and you know, we're glad in Georgia the governor took a different tact, and in North Carolina I think a lot of people have seen what effect it's had as far as business and the economy of the state. So I'm hoping there'll be some change before we go back in next session and the attitudes of some of our colleagues.
Are you a betting man? Because I got some money to put up against you on that one.
I'm an optimist. My glass is half full. We know it'll be back, but and I don't really think they can get a deal compromised that can keep everybody happy on this one.
Okay.
Congress will be facing some more votes like that too if they allow them to occur.
Well, it's going to be obviously fascinating to watch that unfold. You want to talk about how about some presidential politics? Y'all
well, nothing's happening there.
Well, one of the things that I thought was we ought to talk about is we've talked about this on the show the last couple of times, Jim Galloway, and I've been trying to win you over to my position on this, and I'm going to try again today.
All right.
And Steve Henson, I'd love to hear your take. You're a Hillary Clinton supporter. Bernie Sanders won't stop. He continues to attack Hillary Clinton. He has made it clear he's going all the way to California. Donald Trump speaks out on behalf of the fact that the Democrats are undermining, rigging the system, and you shrug.
4 weeks ago, we saw the people saying, "Oh, Republicans are dead." Rubio and all of them were in the room jumping on Trump and tearing him apart. And everybody said he'll never get off the floor. Cruz is going to be after him the whole time. Primary's over. They kissed and made up. The Republican parties are trying to unify. And is there some a little bit of damage that needs to be repaired on their side? Yes. But it's being worked on. It's going to be largely repaired. On our side, is Bernie causing some heartache right now? On the Hillary Clinton side, sure. But I think most of the people who are adamant supporters of one or the other candidate are going to stay with the Democratic Party, going to stay with the nominee.
I think you just said a crucial thing. Adamant supporters. And you're not going to win this election, whether you're Trump or Clinton, with just adamant supporters.
That's true. And one of the best things our party will have is Trump keeping the independence back.
Todd, you
want to
jump in?
The more I see Bernie Sanders going after Hillary, the more inclined I am to go online and make a $20 donation to keep him going after this. There was an interesting article in 538. I don't know if it was published before, but I saw it this morning about folks who are Bernie Sanders supporters, and that a large number of them don't call themselves Democrats. Now, they may be to the left of the Democratic Party. Some of them may be to the right of the Democratic Party. But the point was that there is a pool of votes out there that is active in these contests that may not come back, or they may not come back to the Democratic candidate, or you probably have some folks out there voting for Trump who don't call themselves Republicans. And it makes for an interesting year.
But you're going to see the people who are supporting Bernie now, when they're talking about more affordable college tuition, when they're talking about income inequality, these are issues that Hillary are much more aligned to their views than Donald Trump. So I think they'll eventually come home. Will there be some frustration? Sure, but
that's the thing, is that there is no home for these folks in terms of politics. These are not, it's not a question of coming home.
But there is an anti-home, and let me explain what I mean by that here, is that what you've got is Alan Abramowitz over at Emory. If you can hear me, give me a shout real quick, because you could probably explain this better than I can. But this is, we are so divided in this country. We are no longer motivated by party. We're more motivated by how much we hate the other party. This isn't going to be so much a vote for Hillary Clinton as it will be for Donald Trump. And you can see in the polling, New York Times, I think, had it today, what you're seeing on the Republican side is they're not motivated by Donald Trump so much as hatred for Hillary Clinton.
But yep. I'm not in a position to be able to rule out Donald Trump getting up tomorrow and promising everybody free college in perpetuity. You never know where he's going to end up on the issues, and so who knows what he's going to say to try to get after Sanders folks or disaffected Democrats.
Well, if it's all about as you say, the anti not home, and I think mm-hmm. that's a really good point, Jim. Then Bernie Sanders is hurting Hillary Clinton in that respect. The longer he continues
to
attack
her. Once the primary is over, once we have our convention, Bernie has said in the past he's going to support the nominee if it's not him. And if he gets on board and starts making speeches and helps,
I think it was really interesting what the Hillary Clinton interview on CNN.
Well, you know
Go
ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, she declared the race over.
Jim. This is why we love having you on the show. Let's listen to her talking. Who is it, Jake Tapper she was talking to? I can't remember.
I believe so.
Okay.
I went all the way to the end against then-Senator Obama. I won 9 out of the last 12 contests. Back in 08, I won Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia. So I know the intense feelings that arise, particularly among your supporters, as you go toward the end. But we both were following the same rules, just as both Senator Sanders and I are following the same rules. And I'm 3 million votes ahead of him, and I have an insurmountable lead in pledged delegates. When I came out and withdrew and endorsed Senator Obama, about 40%, according to polls, about 40% of my supporters said they would never support him. So I worked really hard to make the case, as I'm sure Senator Sanders will, that whatever differences we might have, they pale in comparison to the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party.
All right, Steve Henson, Hillary Clinton talking to CNN. Here's where I think we've got a difference. Hillary Clinton is right. I mean, the way that contest in 2008 played out, she was winning states down the line the way Bernie Sanders is. Here's the difference. Hillary Clinton was a Democrat. Hillary Clinton had to get in line because she was a regular member of the Democratic Party. As Todd Rehm probably would say, Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. He's got no, he doesn't gain a whole, he could gain a lot.
Developed some relationships.
I know that.
He also is totally against the spirit and policies of the Trump.
More important,
Hillary Clinton wanted something out of Barack Obama that Barack Obama could deliver.
There you go.
She wanted to be in his cabinet.
Right.
I don't think that Bernie Sanders wants to be in Hillary Clinton's cabinet.
Well, I expect Bernie Sanders to help, and I think we will, be triumphant.
I'm telling you, we're going to keep talking about this. Todd, I really think the longer Sanders is in there, the more he makes it difficult for her in a general election.
And at the very least, it provides some comic relief.
All right. We have a very short break. Jenny Ammon tells me it's like 15 seconds long. That's the kind of break we like around here. Let's do it. You're listening to Political Rewind at 3:47.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Political Rewind on Georgia Public Broadcasting, an 18-station radio network. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, offering 55 undergraduate and graduate degree programs in more than 250 fields of study.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut, State Senator Steve Henson, Todd Rehm, GeorgiaPundit.com, where you can every day get his blog on what's happening in state, national, and local politics. And Jim Galloway of the AJC, Political Insider at AJC.com, and his column, of course, Thursdays and Sundays in the Dead Tree edition of the paper. Before we go on with our conversation, and we have a few more things I certainly hope we can talk about, I would like to tell you about an event that we have coming up that I think might be of particular interest to those of you who are Political Rewind listeners. We have a really wonderful partnership with the Jimmy Carter Presidential Library in which we record in front of live audiences some of our conversations that go on our show Two Way Street, the other show that Jenny Ament and I put together here at GPB. Next Wednesday night, May 25th at 7 p.m., we're going to be at the Carter Library and we're going to do a really, I hope, in-depth conversation with Andrew Young about his life, his career, what led him toward civil rights, where was he most frightened when he marched with Dr. King, and I think you'll be surprised when you hear the answer to that, and a lot of other interesting aspects of his life and career. Yesterday, Jenny and I visited with Andrew Young at his office to talk to him a little bit about the event next Wednesday night, and here's what we talked about.
Well, my life has been miraculous, and I just tell what's happened.
When I was a high school student and then a college student in Chicago, I watched the civil rights movement from afar. Mm-hmm. And then I came down here in 1983 to be a reporter, and to get to know you and John and the other, what a thrill it's been for me to have had a relationship with you over these years. It's been I'm very grateful for that.
Well, it's been a good town for the last 50 years. And I want people to understand that it's not magic, but it is hard work. And it requires people working together in spite of their differences. And you and I are always arguing about something. But that's what makes us good friends. And the truth of it is, I never think you really believe what you're asking me. And I exaggerate what I say to you. But we push each other to the limits.
We should have fun. Thanks a lot.
So that's my friend Andy Young. We're doing this. I step out of a role as a journalist. This is a conversation, a host role between two people who've known each other a very, very long time. If you're interested in coming, it's free admission. It's at the Carter Library, 7 o'clock, next Wednesday night, May 25th. I would suggest you get there early. It's slightly limited seating, but we'd love to have you be part of that conversation with Andy Young. You've known Andy Young for a long time too, Galloway.
Oh, I was dead. Look, I was at City Hall when he was mayor. That was my beat.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. You have any questions? You've got to let me know some of the questions you'd like me to ask him off air.
All right. I'm thinking. Okay.
Steve, you've dealt with Ambassador Young for a long time.
I was wondering whether you called him Congressman, Mayor, or Ambassador. Or...
You know, it's funny. We had a conversation about that we cut out of that little thing. I said to him, I said, you and I have known each other 30 plus years. We'd call each other Andy and Bill. Is that going to work for you Wednesday night? And he said, of course, that's what we call each other.
Yeah, he's that kind of person. He's down to earth, and he's really sacrificed a lot to help other people make it both in politics and in business and in the community. So that's great.
Okay. Let's talk a little more politics. Thank you all for allowing me to get that shameless promotion out of the way. But I do think it's going to be a good evening over there. Let's talk about a few more issues that we didn't get to during the rest of this conversation. One of them is, Jim, you mentioned when we started the show there are some interesting races on the ballot next Tuesday, especially in the state Senate. I assume one of the things you're referring to is Brandon Beach up in Alpharetta.
I've got to identify that as probably the most important race on Tuesday, simply because Brandon Beach has been the Republican out there the most, out the furthest, if you will, on the changing GOP attitude toward transit and commuter rail. And he pushed the MARTA bill this last year. He was very big on HB 170 the year before that. And if he is discarded in a Republican Party, that's going to send a very potent message to the legislature.
Todd, has Aaron Barlow got a good chance to unseat him?
I think that geography plays a large role in that. It is about 65-70% Cherokee County. And Cherokee County, when you cross the border, the difference in Republicans between North Fulton County and Cherokee County is as stark as you'll see anywhere. Cherokee is very ideologically driven. I would say the Cherokee Tea Party, the one that meets up there in Canton, is probably the largest one that I've seen recently. Very activist, very confrontational, and in Fulton County, they're much closer to the kind of folks we have in DeKalb Republican circles, very much more friendly towards things like MARTA. And if Brandon loses that race, it will not be that the North Fulton folks repudiated him. It will be that the folks in Cherokee overwhelmed
North Fulton. And that's what makes this interesting. Both Beach and Barlow are North Fulton candidates. They are from North Fulton. But Barlow has really kind of gone after the Cherokee vote. He has implied in a few of his flyers that Brandon Beach wants to push MARTA into Cherokee County, and of course that prompted Robbie Ash, the chairman of the MARTA board, to come out with a pretty fun letter to the editor of the Cherokee Tribune saying, no, we're not going to invade Cherokee County, and no, we couldn't if we wanted to because the state constitution wouldn't allow it.
The interesting thing with Brandon Beach is, you know, and several other candidates are getting attacked about raising taxes for transportation. And they didn't raise as much money as the chamber wanted them to on transportation. But I think all these primary challengers are going to make it very hard if anybody wants to revisit that issue to raise revenue for anything. Another thing, Chuck Hofstetler voted or publicly said he was for expansion of Medicaid. And he didn't even have a primary opponent.
He doesn't have a primary opponent.
And I think that sent a signal to some of his Republican colleagues that maybe we can do something with health care.
I think it's also notable that if I recall correctly, Brandon Beach first came into office with it winning a special election, which allows an area like Fulton County to punch above its weight. And I'm not sure, I don't believe he's had at least not a strongly contested race at the normal time.
Yeah,
for
this is a district that was originally fashioned by Chip Rogers, who was the Senate Majority Leader then, and a very, very conservative fellow in the Cherokee way of conservatism.
I apologize for interrupting. Let me do a quick piece of business here. The New York Times has just reported the White House is on lockdown right now. There was a shooting near the White House. This is all we know. A man was wounded. President Obama is not in the White House at this point. He's away. But apparently, according to the New York Times, the White House is on lockdown. I'm sure there'll be a lot more on all things considered about exactly what's going on in Washington. Steve Henson, you got some interesting stuff going on out DeKalb County way. You've got a race for CEO between two very well-known candidates.
Yeah, you don't forget Joe Bembry, who's run for everything in DeKalb for a long time. But, yeah, we have Connie Stokes, former state senator, the Democratic nominee for lieutenant governor last year, against Michael Thurman, who served as our labor commissioner for a number of years, and then years came over and was superintendent of our schools. By all reports, did a good job there. And so we've got an interesting race. The pundits are thinking Michael Thurman will lead that race, but we'll know on Tuesday. We're expecting a big turnout in DeKalb County because the DA race, where we have a DA who, of course, indicted Burl Ellis and angered some of the establishment, had some problems with some of his charges on different trips and stuff, has come under serious attack from Sherry Boston, who has gotten a lot of powerful, Elena Parent, Tom Brown, former sheriff, Hank Johnson.
Did she not just announce an Andy Young? Was it Andy Young that she announced an endorsement from?
Yeah, that one I didn't hear, but she has a very impressive list when you're going against an incumbent, almost unheard of. So that's a really interesting race. And so we've got a lot out in DeKalb County. We got Vernon Jones, the former CEO of DeKalb County, trying to come back in a House seat. So maybe Jim knows a little bit about that. But people I hear say he's got a real chance and see him back in the political fray.
There was an email this morning saying that Andrew Young did endorse Sherry Boston. There's also, you've also got a great commission district race, Commission District 5, where the beleaguered Sharon Barnes Sutton is...
District
4, I apologize. And a fellow named Steve Bradshaw, who went, I believe, to a runoff with her in the previous race, is taking a second bite at the apple.
And Lance Hammond is in that, too, and Lance was vice chair, president of the NAACP.
And all of that DeKalb County activity is why I think Jim Barksdale may have a chance just to walk out of this Democratic primary for U.S. Senate.
And I think we should say that one of the reasons we spend time talking about DeKalb County is that in the past, certainly
Democratic votes in the state.
Yes, and it is also a county that has been under a microscope for corruption and an inability for commissioners to do business together, unlike any other county in the state currently.
But on the Republican side in DeKalb County, you've got the two House districts that are even within shooting distance of winnable by somebody from the other party, House District 81 and House District 80, where I live, where you've got flourishing Republican primaries.
We'll have good talks about that in November.
I'm not sure you want to use the word shooting distance when you're talking about a DeKalb County political race.
Well, this is the Brookhaven seat of Taylor Bennett, right. and Scott
Democrat
Holcomb,
Taylor Bennett, right,
and Scott Holcomb, both white Democrats.
Primary will be more interesting to see what happens to Tom Taylor after his
Tom Taylor, who was arrested for DUI. He's got an opponent who is not allowed in the state capitol because he's considered dangerous. That'll be fascinating to watch unfold. We are totally out of time on today's Political Rewind. State Senator Steve Henson, Todd Rehm, Jim Galloway, terrific to have you here. We'll be back next Wednesday at 2 o'clock, right after the Georgia primary has been settled, and we'll be able to see how the dust clears and where things stand. I'm Bill Nigut. Thanks so much for being with us today. If you can't be near the radio, look for us on the gpbnews.com website. You can listen to our shows there. Have a great afternoon.